Leaning Toward Wisdom, it's episode 4022. The Value of Boredom, that's today's show. You Don't Know How I Feel by Tom Petty. Yeah, let's don't roll another joint. We don't do that. Not around here. I gotta go and you don't know how it feels. You don't know how it feels to be me. Isn't that refrain the refrain that a lot of us sing every day? You don't know how it feels to be me. And yet we're all feeling kind of the same thing. At least some of us. Well, maybe better said, we're all feeling the same thing. Maybe we're feeling it at different times. And there's not a person on the planet that has not experienced boredom. Boredom, and I want to talk to you about the value of boredom, because I think it does have value. If you go back in time, way back, before there was TV, I can't remember that, by the way. I'm old, but I'm not that old. I remember TV always being there, but it was black and white. In fact, just this past weekend was the 45th anniversary of the landing on the moon. And I remember being, let's see, how old would I have been? I am 57, so if it was 45 years ago, I was 12. I was 12 when I watched the guys land on the moon. Well, I watched Neil Armstrong make that first step. And, of course, the TV was very snowy and black and white. One of those big tubes, you know, with a big curvature to it. But there was a time. There was a time when families sat around reading books, playing games, board games, card games, whatever, doing these indoor activities that they could all do together in a central room in the house. Do you remember that? Are you old enough to remember such a time as that? Now, in this part of the country, and it may be different depending on where you're at in the world and where you're at even in America, we called it the den. The den, D-E-N. I don't hear people talk about a room called the den anymore. It's called the family room. People have game rooms. They have entertainment rooms. They have multiple living spaces. That one's kind of baffled me. Yes, this house has two living spaces. Well, so there's two places where you can inhabit and the rest of it is off limits. I'm not sure about all that, but we called it the den. And in the den is where the family would huddle. We would huddle. Well, I started to say we would huddle for safety, but not so much safety in the context of the security of a home, not safety in that you're hiding from anything, but just the family was together. And whatever evening entertainment would ensue was bound to happen in the den. Because it's where we gathered. It's where the TV set would be. It's where the stereo or the hi-fi would be. It's where the sofa and the coffee table. It's where Dad's lazy boy recliner was. It was in the den. And in the den is where we interacted with family members. We would do all that stuff families would do. I remember being in middle school sitting in the den, and I would have around me these hi-fi magazines and all my paraphernalia that went with my interest in hi-fi and in music. And over in another section of the same room, my sister might be doing something and the parents would be, we were all at least in the same room together. We might not all be doing exactly the same thing. Somebody could be reading. Somebody else could be drawing. Somebody else could be thumbing through a catalog. It didn't matter, but we were all in there together. I don't remember a time before television, but I do remember a time before color television. I don't remember exactly when touch-tone phones came out. Yeah, the push button, they all used to be the dial. I was thinking the other day, And I don't know what prompted me to think about it, but I was remembering in a small town in Oklahoma where I was born, and the prefix of the phone numbers. And you didn't dial an area code. I mean, the area code, that was a given. But in the little town where I was born, all of the prefixes were, well, they called them federal, but it was two letters followed by a number. And that was that 3-digit prefix. You know, for instance, my work phone, the prefix to my work phone, not the area code, but the prefix to the work phone is 262. Okay, well, you didn't say 262. It was FE2. FE2. And then followed by the 4 digits. Long time ago. Party lines. Do you remember party lines? Yeah, this doesn't have anything to do with boredom, but hey, it's my podcast. I can kind of morph and go anywhere I want to. I'll get back to it. It is the value of boredom, and it's just indicative of how the world has changed and technology has changed. Not long ago, I was watching a show on Discovery or History Channel, one of those, and the show was interviewing some folks from Appalachia who, well, they live down in the holler, and down in the holler, well, no TV, no cell signals would even dare venture down into the holler. Yeah, there was lots of drinking, lots of alcohol, but there was also lots of singing and playing music. And I got to thinking, okay, boredom can do that for you. Boredom can either drive you to drink or drive you to learn to play the banjo. You've likely seen some shows about, oh, the Alaska frontier, or people who live in these terribly remote places where the winters are just brutal. Have you ever seen Alaska Troopers? I mean, it's amazing. 90% of their calls, in the winter at least, they come from domestic disputes brought about because of alcohol. You know, cabin fever kicks in and people are stuck inside and bored out of their minds, and a lot of people just go to the bottle. No, I'm not suggesting that any more than I'm suggesting Tom Petty's advice to, you know, let's roll another joint. It's not about that. It is about, you don't know how I feel, or you don't know how it feels to be me. And we can especially be drawn, I think, to that notion when we're bored. And it could be other times too. It could be when we're struggling through something and we think, man, nobody understands. Nobody gets this. And the truth is, we all get it, because we've all been there. You look at the people that are terribly successful today and you think, man, alive, they don't know what it is to be where I'm at. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. They may not. Maybe everybody doesn't, but whether you're born with a silver or a gold or a platinum or a titanium spoon in your mouth or no spoon at all, the problems that we face as human beings are pretty common, pretty typical. Boredom is one of those things. We are so entertained, and it could be argued, and I'm going to argue it, too entertained to do something more creative, too entertained to do something more productive. Kids today are stuck inside. This sounds like an old man talking. Well, I am an old man. But kids are stuck inside. I was coming through the subdivision where we live. Nice neighborhood, big trees, big yards. And I was remarking to my wife, and I do this maybe twice a year, especially in the summer. There's no kids. No kids. Yeah, you never see kids outside. The only time I see kids outside is some organized sports thing. There's some ball fields not too far from where I live, and there's also some soccer fields. And occasionally you'll see kids out there, but it's always it's an organized thing. It's when there's coaches and parents and there's games going on. And sometimes there's a football practice or two, but it's organized. You just don't see kids out organizing themselves. I don't see that. Do you see that? No, you know why? Because kids are glued to screens. They're playing video games, and they're in their room. As a parent, I was always opposed to my kids having a television in their room. And by the time computers came around and the internet, was certainly opposed to my kids having a computer in their room. Didn't happen. And if I had kids today, and of course my kids are now in their 30s, but if I had kids today, I'd still live by that. You know, if you're going to get on a computer, you're going to get on it. Well, A, you're going to get on it in a more public place in the house, and you're going to get on it where I can see the screen, where anybody can see the screen. Is that too old fashioned, you think? I just think it's safe. Parents will, here's what I'll hear when it comes to that kind of stuff, technology with kids. There's just something to me inherently wrong with a kid having a 42-inch flat panel in their bedroom hooked up to a PS3, and they've got a tablet or a laptop, and they've got high-speed Wi-Fi, and they're just holed up in their room. I will hear parents say, well, they're going to learn sometime. And we're usually talking about just all the vices that are in the world. I know they're going to learn it sometime, but as their parent, do you have to be the one to teach it to them? I was in first grade when I saw my very first Playboy magazine. And a fellow student whose mom would later become our second grade teacher. Yeah, she taught in the school. He brought it to school. Well, actually, he brought it on the way to school. And as we're walking to school, he whips us out and says, hey, look. Okay, well, I'd never seen a naked woman. First grader. I remember my dad getting irritated about it. Yeah, that's a whole nother story. But, okay, you could argue, well, a first grade version of me, okay, you're going to see it. So you might as well go ahead and get it over with. I mean, is that the argument? Really? So we're really saying that we really need to expose our first graders to all of the vices and all the crud in the world? I don't think so. Do we not think that it's the role of a parent, and now that I'm a grandparent, to guard and protect the hearts of our kids? Yeah. And then occasionally, you know, I hear the ramrod talk about how, well, I'm not going to raise any naive kids. We're not talking about raising naive kids. We're talking about letting kids be kids. We're talking about protecting kids. Isn't that our job as adults, to protect kids? Okay. That was a side rant. But we're too entertained, and I think sometimes our children are too entertained. But come on, aren't we too? Parents and grandparents, we've got our eyeballs constantly focused on this 3.5-4-inch screen, a 9-inch iPad, some other electronic device. And there's lots and lots and lots of talk online about it, and I've contributed to that. We don't notice our surroundings. We don't notice the people around us. Shoot, we can barely avoid walking into walls or glass doors or poles. And we know it, intellectually we know it, but there's just something addictive about it, isn't there? Seems to be. And so young people, they've got their earbuds in, they're listening to tunes while they text or Snapchat with their friends, and they sit in silence across from each other, communicating only in electronic text. There were conversation pits at a high school that I went to. This was a relatively new high school, and in an area that was indoors between the cafeteria and the gym, and the auditorium. So you've kind of got these three main hubs, right, of where a lot of activity happens in a high school, the gym, the auditorium, and the cafeteria. And there's this, you know, big area. And in this big area, there were multiple carpeted, they called them conversation pits. Kids could sit down. You could sit on the floor, and then along the whole outside perimeter of this thing, you know, carpeted, kind of just, well, it's carpeted concrete is what it was, carpeted concrete seats. And we'd gather there. We'd gather there every morning, and you mill about. You're talking, catching up. But we didn't have cell phones, and we didn't have all this stuff, and I'm totally in favor of technology. It's not that. It's just, I don't know, when we got bored, we just did different stuff. We just didn't have it all provided for us. And yet I'm sure our parents looked at us and thought, man, you know, when we were kids, we had to, you know, we just sat around and rubbed two sticks together to entertain ourselves. And you guys have got all these fancy toys and stuff. I'm sure that conversation happened. But we did play outside. I mean, in the summer, man, you just couldn't wait. You couldn't wait to get up in the morning and go outside. And today, I don't see kids outside in the morning. I don't see them outside in the afternoon. I don't see them outside in the evening. I mean, games like flashlight tag and hide and seek and stuff in your neighborhood. Did you ever do that? I look at kids today and I will ask them, you know, I mean, you mentioned, just say flashlight tag. And the only kids that understand that, they understand the context of playing it inside. They don't understand playing it across two blocks of houses. And I know the world has changed. I know not every neighborhood is safe. And boy, that's sad, isn't it? But I live in a neighborhood that's safe. I mean, trust me, it's safe. This is an older, established neighborhood. Now, part of it could be the demographic. Part of it could be I'm not in a neighborhood that typically has a ton of young families. So that's part of it. But there's so much stuff going on. Now, I tell you what you can hear is I can go into our backyard when the grandkids are over and they're all splashing and yelling and screaming in the pool, and you will hear across the neighborhood, you'll hear the splashing of water in other people's pools. So you know that's going on. And maybe that's where it's all going on. Maybe the outdoor activity is going on in a fenced yard in the backyard, and we didn't have those. I don't remember anybody. I'm sure somebody had a fenced yard. I just don't remember it. I mean, we ran into people's yard playing hide and seek. If three doors down, they had a killer tree that you could hide in, we were there. And I don't remember us having to shinny over any fences or anything to get there. Boredom. And I'm not saying we weren't bored. We were bored, but we weren't bored for very long because two or three of us would sit down and go, okay, well, now what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Somebody bring up some idea, and maybe it involved a ball. Maybe it didn't. Maybe it involved bicycles. Maybe it didn't. Maybe it involved boxing gloves. Maybe it didn't. But we didn't sit around and stay bored very long. And I don't remember us getting into anything terribly, terribly dangerous or mischievous. I mean, we built some contraptions that no doubt could kill us and probably kill half the neighborhood, and it was usually something that we could ride on. And it was usually something that would involve a steep hill. And no, we weren't, you don't think about safety first. You're thinking about going fast. You're not thinking about, wait a minute, if we go really fast, we do need to stop this thing. Now, you're not thinking about stopping it. You're thinking about getting it to go faster. So you're looking for the steepest hill. And you really don't think about stopping it at any point until you get about, I don't know, 10 yards from the bottom. And then it dawns on you, I got no way to stop this thing. You're looking for a curb, a tree, anything. A body of water would have been nice at the bottom of a hill. Then we wouldn't have cared at all about stopping. I don't know that this is a particular domain of young or old alike. I rather think that boredom is something that strikes us all. And I guess today, for me, the subject is, okay, what are you going to do with the boredom? And does boredom have any value? I think boredom does have value because we built contraptions to go down hills and to make them go fast, and we did so out of boredom. It wasn't that we sat around and we thought, you know, we want to be really creative and we really want to be innovative. We created those things because we were bored, because we didn't have anything else to do, and we needed to invent something to do. Does that change as you grow older? I don't think so. I think the problem and the reason that we don't quite have the value of boredom today is because we're mic'd up, we're screened up, we're keyboarded up, and we are tethered to this endless universe of constant stimulus. Is it stimuli? Is that the plural of stimulus? We are constantly stimulated. We go online and there's one blog post after another. There's all kinds of writing, and the most creative writing that exists on the planet are headlines. It's not so much that the articles themselves are worth reading or the blog posts are worth reading, but the headlines captivate us because we are in the TMZ world. We are in the Entertainment Tonight world. Entertain us. We're not necessarily concerned about entertaining ourselves, which is really the TV program that I watched on Discovery or History Channel. I don't recall which, and I don't even remember the name of the show, but it was just, they were interviewing some people who lived up in the mountains in the Appalachia area of our country. And I mean, these were very poor people for starters. They did all have cell phones. And this was comical to me. They all had cell phones, but they had no service. Well, they had service and they paid for service, but they just lived in areas where they couldn't get a signal. They'd have to get in their car and drive in order to get cell service. It's like, okay, why would you have a cell phone if you have no cell service where you're at? Speaking of cell service, there's my phone going off. You probably didn't catch the ringtone of myself, by the way. I hit the pause button, just so you know. No, I didn't answer it. I wasn't going to be electronically distracted from you. Marvin Gaye, what's going on? That's my ringtone. Because isn't that what you ask? I mean, it's the question that everybody asks. It's the question I ask. You answer the phone, you talk to somebody, and the minute you find out who it is, and of course with caller ID, you know who it is, and so you immediately say, hey, what's going on? So that's been my ringtone for, I don't know, 5 years or more, 6, 7. What's going on? What's going on? Nothing. You know, we've got all this stimulus, and yet our answer to the question of, hey, what's going on? Nothing. Oh, nothing. Got about 14,000 blog posts in my RSS reader. Do you have a folder? I've got a folder. Here's another tangent. I've got a folder labeled to read. Do you have a folder like that to read? Do you use some kind of an app where you can kind of bookmark or you can, some people use Evernote and they, what's the app, you know, that you can have in your browser? There's an Evernote. It's a clipping kind of an app where you can clip things to read. Don't we all do this? We amass this huge inventory of things to read. We don't read them. I've got this folder. Let me open this. And this folder is not that old, by the way. I do this periodically. Let me open this and I will tell you exactly how many items this thing has in it. 68 items. I got 68 items. Now what these are, and here's what I've done. Some of these are infographs. Some of these are PDF, like ebooks. But most of these things are blog posts that I just decided to save to PDF. I know that's not an efficient way to go about it. And I'm like, I don't have time to read this right now, but this looks kind of interesting. I'll read it later. I never do. I don't know why I save these things. I never do. I've got a stack of magazines over here. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll read that later. I never do. And another month I get, here's another edition, and then, okay, here's another, okay, here's the next month, and it's like, okay, well, I'm 6 months, I got 6 months worth of these things, and then do you just end up pitching them? I don't, I don't want to throw it away. We've got all this stimulus hitting us, barraging us, and it makes me wonder the difference between consuming and creating, and there's a huge difference in that. And I'm not saying that in order to create, you can't consume. In fact, somebody had done a little blog post about Stephen King on how to be a great writer. Well, some years ago, he wrote a memoir on writing, and I bought the book, and I also got the CDs. At the time, it was just CDs, where he narrates the book. And that seems to me this person picked 20 some odd pieces of advice distilled from that book on how to be a great writer. And of course, seems to me that the number one thing that I think they wrote was stop watching TV and read as much as possible. And every great writer talks about being a great reader. So there's got to be something to recognizing greatness in whatever area that you are interested in pursuing. So if you want to be a great writer, well, you need to read great writing. You can just recognize it. Guitar players are drawn to listen to and pay attention to the work of other great guitar players. So there's a value in consumption, but I think the value okay, means to an end kind of a thing. And it's not that a writer can't read for enjoyment. I'm not saying that. But in its consumption with a purpose, I guess is the best way to say it. It's consumption with a purpose. It's not just, we're not just going to sit down and read and read and read and read and never write. I mean, you've got to create. I love music and I love the guitar. I do not know how to play the guitar, but I can listen to guitar playing all day long. That's not going to make me a guitar player. I mean, I've got to pick up the guitar and play. I remember coming across a phrase when I was in journalism school in another bygone era, writers write. And you can do that noun verb play on anything. Podcasters podcast, bloggers blog, YouTubers YouTube, right? I mean, you just fill in the blank with whatever it is. I mean, there's got to be a verb attached to the noun that you would want to describe your life or whatever it is you do. Well, I want to be a writer. Okay, then write. Well, I want to be a speaker. Okay, speak. I want to be a podcaster. Okay, podcast. And that just sounds far too simplistic, doesn't it? And yet there's something remarkable about it, and there's something remarkably simplistic about it that in many areas, it's no more complex than that. You know, it is that Nike mantra of just do it. Just do it. Well, I'm not sure if I got everything in order, and I'm not sure I'm ready to do this. I'm not sure. You know, we sat around in kids and we didn't analyze it to death. I remember sitting down, laying on the ground, staring up into the pine trees and staring at the sky and trying to figure out what that cloud looked like. And we were bored out of our minds on a summer day, and you're kicking ideas around. It's the brain trust that's brainstorming. And in the brainstorming, somebody throws out something and all the rest of you veto that and go, nah, we don't feel like doing that. Well, why don't you feel it? Nobody asked, well, why don't you feel like doing that? It was just, we immediately discerned good idea, bad idea. And in some cases, we could go either way, but if we weren't terribly excited about it, you know what? We didn't do it. And so the value of boredom was to come to some decision, some conclusion about something, and one idea, a second idea, a third idea, all of them vetoed by the group. And the group could be as small as two of us together. It could be three or more. It didn't matter. And you just kick one idea to the curb after the next, and all of a sudden somebody mentions something. Hey, what if we made it? Let's make a go-kart. Let's make a go-kart that'll go down that big hill down the street. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good. There was never any discussion about resources. There was never any discussion about, well, wait a minute. Do we have this and do we have that and do we have the other? Because if we don't have this, that, and the other, we can't make that go-kart. No, you didn't think about that. You just marshaled all your resources because boredom had driven you to this innovative, creative idea, and now it's like, okay, now we go on a scavenger hunt to find what we need to find so we can build this contraption. Oh, well, is anybody, who's going to draw the schematic for it? There's no drawing of anything. Are you kidding? We just started building. And we tweaked it along the way. And most of the time, it worked terribly. It didn't work well at all. And I talk with kids, and when I say kids, I'm talking about young kids. Well, they could be teenagers, but I'm really talking about kids in elementary school. And it's amazing. It's just amazing. I've got really young grandkids, and you could put an iPad or you can put an iPhone in one of their hands, and they instinctively, it is remarkable to me. It's very remarkable. Did Steve Jobs and did Apple, were they so spectacular in their design, or what's going on here? How is it that a kid grabs a phone and, of course, they do what all kids do. They just immediately start pushing buttons and fiddling with their hands. And the minute that they touch the screen and they realize that the screen will respond to their touch, I mean, in no time flat, they figure it out, don't they? Now, is that terrific or what? Yeah, it's terrific. Here's what's not so terrific. It's when you've got a room full of 6 to 8 year olds and they've all got an electronic device in their hand. And I'm not saying there's not value in that, but I mean, come on, is that? It makes me wonder what the world's going to look like. There's a different kind of boredom in that they're bored with that stimulus. It's not that they're bored because they don't know what to do and now they got to dream something up. Now they're bored because they've got so many choices and they're tired of this choice and now they want to move on to another choice. I don't know that it's so much boredom as it is antsiness, you know, and there's a difference. There's a difference in being antsy and bored. You know, antsy is when we just want to do something we really don't much care, just anything but this. Bored is just much more of a peaceful, tranquil state, but mentally you need something. Physically, you may not care. You're willing to lay in the grass, look up into the pine trees and figure out what shapes those clouds look like, but you realize you don't want to do this all day. You got some energy and you want to do something. Nah, I really don't feel like playing baseball. Nah, I really don't feel like throwing the frisbee. Let's go make a fort. Let's go. I mean, we made stuff. We needed wood, nails, and hammers. Wheels helped. You know, wheels really helped. If you were going to ride something, I mean, runners, I guess, would be good if you lived in the north and you were trying to do something in the dead of winter, but I didn't live up north and it wasn't the dead of winter. School was out in the summertime and a lot of bike riding too. You know, boredom resulted in a lot of bike riding. I mean, how cool is it to be a kid and be mobile? And I know parents are worried about that today. Boy, that's sad to me. You know something else that's sad to me? It's sad to me that kids have to wear helmets. Okay, I'm going to get all the safety nerds after me, but I never wore a helmet, right? And my whole generation never wore a helmet riding a bike. Oh, sure, we fell off of bikes. Yeah, we got hurt sometimes. Yeah, we busted our heads every now and then. You know, kids go out today, man, and they are armed. Knee pads, elbow pads, gloves, a helmet to ride a bike. I mean, kidding me? I mean, if we'd had to do that, I don't think we would have ridden bikes either. You know, the value of the bike was, you know, throw your clothes on, swing your leg over it, and take off. Down the road you go. I'm bored with here. I want to go there. Yeah, it's much better to be there and be bored than it is to be here and be bored. It's a different kind of boredom because it's there. It's not here. And I wonder about the value of boredom. I just wonder about the value of boredom when it comes to creativity, when it comes to innovation, when it comes to just, I don't know, even just figuring things out. Constantly stimulated, constantly chasing fans, constantly chasing followers, constantly trying to add to our friends. Content creation, content consuming. All with one purpose, attention. We want your attention. We are living in a, hey, look at me world. Well, hey, come on. Here I am. I fired up a microphone. Hey, look at me. Hey, listen to me. Hey, watch me. Hey, isn't this cool? You know, I just wish I was bored enough to actually sit down with a guitar and learn to play it. And maybe I need to move to Appalachia. And since I don't drink at all, I might have a shot. I might have a shot at actually learning to play music instead of just listening to music. The website is Leaning Toward Wisdom. My name's Randy Cantrell. I'm coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. From a room that's painted yellow, hence the name, The Yellow Studio. Ahead, I have nowhere to go.
subject to narrow